Blog Talk Radio.
Once again, it's all about real estate with Mrs. Tiki Williams. Today, we're going to be talking, it's all about credit, and we're going to give a nice hand and let her come on into the show.
Well, thank you so much, and guys, welcome to All About Real Estate with Tiki Williams. So glad to have everyone on tonight. We have a special guest tonight that is going to be talking to us about consumer credit, debt collection. We're going to be talking about litigation, consumer laws. He is going to bring a wealth of knowledge. His name is Mr. Kenneth Lamont, and he comes with over 20 years of experience with credit and being a creditor and consumer advocate, along with background as being a mortgage broker as well. So we're going to go ahead and get started and let him come in and educate us on tonight. So good evening, Ken. Are you here?
Good evening. I'm here. Can you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you so much for coming on tonight. We are super excited to hear all the gems and wealth you're about to drop on us tonight. So
okay,
I will
then.
Go ahead and let you get started.
Okay, okay. Well, again, my name is Ken Lamas. My company is Credit Education Group. I've been in this credit debt industry for 22 years. I have a background working with the banks for 13 years in mortgage default. Worked for one of the largest at the time debt collection companies at the, back in the early 2000s, mid-2000s, NCO Financial. And I was working with a lot of, you know, credit card debts and things like that. So I've had an opportunity to kind of see things on both sides of the spectrum. And, you know, once I kind of saw that, then I decided to come on this side and stay here. And so that I can actually start to help other individuals understand some of these things that we've been going through in this credit life and credit game that we're dealing with.
Okay, awesome, awesome. You have a lot of great background, and so we are super excited to hear about how we can help to improve our credit, but how you can help us. Educate us, I'm sorry, and helping for us to improve our credit and steps we can take to make that happen. I'm super excited.
Absolutely. Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of things that, you know, I think a lot of us can do. I think the biggest issue that a lot of us who are in the credit industry and just consumers as a whole, we just don't know some of the parameters of how this stuff really works. The issues are basically lack of understanding. You know, not just the lack of knowledge, but lack of understanding how and what really needs to happen, what needs to take place before you jump into any type of credit situation, you know. And so sometimes then when life happens, you kind of fighting on your heels and you fight emotionally, but you don't fight strategically, you know. And so it's always good to know what you're getting into before you get into it.
Good. So what are some of the basic things that consumers should know about dealing with their credit?
I think just understanding what it is that they're signing into. You know, a lot of times we'll go to, let me say this too first, you know, because we want to preface, you know, credit. Sometimes it's an extension of some form of credit. It can be going to the doctor. It could be furniture. It can be anything that you come into a contractual agreement with. And what's going to be an issue is the fact that we don't really know what we're signing. We don't read it. We don't read it to understand it because we just don't know. So if we want the service, we want what we're trying to get, we just sign. So then if bad things happen, life starts to happen, then we fall into that situation of not knowing how to deal with it.
And so what are some of the common things that you see when people are, say, signing up for credit, for credit cards or car loans? What are some of the misconceptions that a consumer has when they sign up for this credit that we're supposedly getting?
I think it kind of goes back to that same thing. You know, first of all, in my opinion, I think the best way to actually buy a vehicle, just say, is to not go to the dealership if you can help it. Always get your financing first, okay? It also gives you, you know, a level of, you know, kind of puts you at an advantage because you can go in and so basically you're buying cash in essence, right? So you could kind of dictate what you're going to pay. The best thing to me is always to get what you're going to get from buying a car from your get your financing first. Now, of course, sometimes you may not be able to, and so we find ourselves kind of stuck with whatever the dealership may give us, you know, kind of thing. And so in some cases, it's just, hey, I can get it when I can get it, and then maybe, hey, and maybe in a couple months you can come back and maybe refinance it if you can, you know, because you've gotten your credit up a little bit more, scores a little bit better, and, you know, but buying vehicles and things like that, we see a lot of times how much people fall into the trap dealing with even gap insurance once you do get the car, not realizing that the gap insurance actually decreases like the age of the car. It decreases in value. So what we see a lot of times is that when a person happens to get into a an accident or something like that, then wind up happening, they say, well, I had gap insurance. Well, the gap insurance is only going to cover the value of the car, not your balance. So you still wind up having a balance sometimes because it still depreciates. You know, so a lot of times we don't know going into that, and so now I'm dealing with people who have lawsuits behind that because there's deficiency balance. The creditor decided to sell that balance off, and now you got the debt collectors coming after them for those things. So, yeah, just understanding, you know, what you're getting into. You know, we don't ever want to look at to the negative things of things, but those possibilities are real. So it's always good to know what exactly you're getting into before you get into it.
Okay, awesome. So let's talk a little bit more about that balance, because we've had, I know, someone has known someone who has had that happen to them that did not per se have gap insurance or had gap insurance, but it still didn't cover the remaining portion of what the car was owed. So, okay, so now the creditor sells your debt off. You owe it. Say you pay it. Now, it's on your credit report. You know, you work with the debt collector to pay it, but now what? I mean, does that help me to, once I pay it, will that help my credit? Or should I just not pay it and let it fall off in 7 years?
No, don't ever do that. Don't ever just wait. Now, in some cases, it may help, and in some cases, it may not. I would say that, for me, we always instruct consumers to not pay debt collection companies. And you don't pay debt collection companies because there's not a relationship there. You're not paying it just because you say, well, there's no contract, so I don't owe you anything. There's a presumption that the debt collector is coming after an individual because they said you owe someone else. So that someone else is not coming after you, though. So the idea of what's being owed is not what they're presenting to you. They're presenting to you what someone else discarded, and then they picked up. Hence why they call them a lot of times junk debt buyers, right? So when they pick up what they buy for pennies on a dollar, they tell you that you're still obligated to the contractual balance. They don't tell you that you owe what they paid for it. So it's like they buy wholesale and sell retail. And this is what, you know, how they do that. So I never instruct a person to pay. You always make them show what they're claiming that's owed to them, not from something else. So part of what we end up getting into a trap with is that we end up fighting emotionally about something that was, but not realizing that the person that you're dealing with, you don't owe. You never have an obligation to pay that person.
Okay, so I have this, say, make a $10,000 balance. They're calling me. What do I say to them to say, look, now you need to prove to me that I owe this balance, or you're going to show me what do I need to say to this debt collection company so that I can get the proof of what I truly owe?
Okay, first things first. If they reach out to you, they communicate with you by one of a couple different ways. Let's say in your scenario they're calling you. They call you. Find out who you're speaking to. Find out the information as far as who it is. Let me back up. Let me dismiss something first. What a lot of people will tell you is that when you speak to them, you're actually agreeing to the debt, or you're making the debt be known that it's yours. That's not true. Because keep in mind, the information that they're asking you for is to identify who you are, not what you owe. So just because they identified you, if someone asked me, hey, is your name what it is? I said, yes. You know, is your last four this? Yes. Do you live at this address? Yes. Okay. You just verified that information. It has absolutely nothing to do with a debt. I just want to get that out the way first, because a lot of people will tell you, well, the moment you say that, you acknowledge the debt. No, I acknowledge who I was, not the debt, not the same thing. So once you get past that, now your next conversation is, like for me, when I'm on the phone with clients, I never answer their questions. I make them answer mine. So, for example, if you're asking me about the alleged debt, I'm asking you who you are. Who are you? Well, my name is so-and-so. You work for such-and-such place. All right. Now, let's talk about this alleged account. That account, this amount of money. My question is, how am I obligated to you? Okay. They won't be able to answer that. They're going to deflect it and say, well, we purchased it from such and such. Well, my question is still the same. How am I obligated to you? Because the law states that it can't be a debt unless there was a transaction, right? So if there's no transaction, how am I obligated? By what terms? There's no terms. How am I obligated? Well, ma'am, sir, you owe $1,000 to such and such from the account that you defaulted on. Wait, you said you purchased it. So how is there a default? Because what happens is there's no longer an actual debt in the definition of the word for the person who's coming after you. That debt collection company does not have, or you don't have a debt with them. They said this is an attempt to collect the debt. The definition of debt means that you had to have had a transaction, or someone had to extend something to you that created that. They bought it from somebody. So it's not a debt. All they did was buy information and make you remember who it came from so that you can pay it. So what happens is you don't want to fall into the trap of actually giving yourself away by saying you did business with prior to them. That business is your business. What you did with them don't have nothing to do with the person you're talking to now. But what we have a tendency of doing is saying something like, well, yeah, I had an account for X amount of dollars, or you start discussing it with them. You know, you start discussing your business with them when you had no business with them. So if it was a credit card, a car, some furniture, or whatever the case might be, do not discuss with them your business. Only speak to them about the relevant things that you guys are talking about at that moment. They're talking about a non-existent thing that they call a debt. That's what they're talking about. What debt are you talking about? How do I owe you? Right? What were the terms of our arrangement? These are the conversations you need to have. Don't say, well, if I had a credit card and it was $1,000, well, I had a $1,000 limit. Well, how do you say I owe now $1,500? Then they're going to tell you, oh, well, we had interest, and then you don't know how to respond to it. Okay, when did the interest start? When did it end? When was this charged off? When was the last payment made? You see, these are the things that you're asking them from an alleged standpoint. Because when you ask certain questions, it leads to you potentially putting them on the hook. Now you have them on their recorded line telling you false information.
Ah.
Yeah. Because don't they tell you that their calls may be recorded?
Absolutely.
Right? They don't ask you. They don't ask you, hey, is it okay if I call you and record you? No, they tell you these calls may be recorded and monitored. Well, guess what? Most of them are. And you can always test them. And you'll simply test them by saying something like, well, I'll have my supervisor go back and listen to it later. Oh, I thought you said it may be recorded. You just told me it was. These people are not that smart. We give them way too much credit. Way too much credit. So, yeah, those are some of the things of how you want to approach speaking to them. Don't speak to them about why they're calling you. Speak to them about in a sense of why they think you owe them. That's what they have to prove.
So then what happens if, you know, I say, hey, Mr. Creditor, I need for you to send me proof of this potential debt that I owe. And they say, oh, well, we've already sent you letters or we sent you this. What is my next steps after that?
You make them prove it to you. That's see, okay, so if someone called you and or you saw something on your credit report and you decide, well, look, let me reach out to you and see exactly what it is I can do to resolve this. Let's just say you don't know statute of limitations for your state. You don't know if they have authority, if your state requires, like we do here in the state of Texas, requires you to have a bond. You don't know any of those things first, right? So what we want to do is educate people enough to know that when these folks do call you, they're calling you for from a permissible purpose standpoint. And I'm just going to tell you, they never do, because the permissible purpose would mean that you did business with them. So they're calling you just to take something out of your pockets. You see, and if that's what they're doing, that's their whole premise of contacting you. They don't care nothing about your story, your why. They just want to know when you're going to pay them some money. That's it.
That's it. That's it. That's all.
That's what it is. And if you understand that premise, you don't have to argue. I get folks tell me all the time, Ken, how are you so calm? What I'm getting upset for? I know what they don't know. Ain't no need for me to get upset. They'll hang up on me before I hang up on them. Right? Because I know the questions and the answers. That's how we should be. Whenever these individuals are contacting us, and understand this, the communication to you don't have to just be a phone call. It's also the fact that they put it on your credit report. They may email you. They may even send you a text message. All those things are forms of communication, right? So if you say, well, listen, I got a letter from you. How do I fix this? And they go through their process. Now, you asking how do you fix it don't mean that that's an obligation to pay you. How do I fix this? So first you need to understand who you're dealing with, how you deal with them. And this is how you kind of do that. You make them show you. Well, ma'am, sir, we sent you a letter out. When? Our system says we sent that on this date. Okay, this is my next question to you. Ma'am, sir, I'm sorry, did you send it? No, I didn't personally send it. That's what your system says it sent. Yes. Did you send it certified by chance? No. Because what they always want to say, well, we didn't get anything back. Keep in mind, you're talking to the person on the phone. They don't work in the mailroom.
Right.
They don't know if something came back or not. So I put them on the point, since that's the person who's telling me this information, I'm asking him or her, did you mail it? You didn't. So that means you don't know if this was mailed or not. I understand what your system might say. So then I hit him with things like this. If we had to go stand before a federal judge, would you be able to get on the stand and stand flat-footed and say you mailed it, or you know for a fact that it was mailed? No. Okay, then. So I'm advising you that I never received what you alleged was sent to me. So this is what you might want to do. Send me another letter, since you say you sent the first one. They're going to confirm your address so that I can respond to you properly. So once you respond to them and know how to respond to them, they won't contact you no more. Now that we got anything to do with it. And if they do, they're going to be paying you for it.
Oh, they'll be paying me. Let's talk about that.
Yeah.
So how do I get paid off of something like this?
For debt collectors, here's the thing. Debt collection companies, to you, make assumptions. The assumptions is you owe them. They think that it's a debt. When you say to them in certain words or in certain verbiage that the information that they've sent to you, again, it could be on your credit report. It could not be on your credit report. They could have sent you a letter. They could have not sent you a letter. They could have called you. Right? Any of those things that happen, if you send them the right documentation, simply one, we call what we call a CC letter, right? We send that letter that basically says, we don't know who you are. We've never done business with you. So don't reach out to me no more. Done. That's your letter. Statutes mandate them to respond to you in a certain way. If they send you a letter that says, oh, Tiki, you don't know who we are? Let me go ahead and send you this letter again and demand payment from you. Guess what? The moment that happens, they're potentially in violation of federal statutes. That's worth a minimum of $1,000 to you. That's every single debt collector that you have. Every single one.
Wow. So where have you been for the last, like, 20 years? No, you go ahead.
Well, see, here's the thing, though. We don't always – see, there's a lot of people who do credit repair and credit restoration and things like that. I don't knock anybody on in a way they do things and stuff like that. But I think – I will go out on a limb and say that a lot of the credit repair individuals are kind of one-sided. And that's not a good or a bad. And what I mean by that is just that they have a way that they do things. It's not wrong. It's not bad. It's just that they have a way. Most people don't get into the litigation side because most people don't read and understand the laws behind it. What most people in the industry do is practice tactics. Now, the tactics work until they don't. So when they don't, what's next? Right? So this is where a lot of times individuals get upset because the item didn't come off. Every item is not or may not come off your credit. But what if someone made you better? You messed it up all by yourself, but then now you're relying on someone else to make it all better for you. Doesn't matter
if
you pay
them or
not.
So I do have a question. What makes your company different from a credit repair company? Let's talk about, like, the differences, like what a credit repair company does versus what your company actually does.
Well, we have a bunch of the same tactics and the same things in certain areas. The difference for us, or for me personally, I consider myself being a consumer advocate, not a credit specialist. Credit is just one of the things that we deal in. Because for me, I deal with a lot of disputable things, lawsuits, things that are not just something that's going to come off your credit report. It, like I said, it might not even be on your credit report. So I'm dealing with these individuals. A lot of times I'm calling on the phone with my client and the debt collector, the creditor, the finance company, and all of that because I know these people don't know what they're doing. They don't know law. They just know what they were told and what they were taught. That's it. So most of your credit repair people are just going to get items to try to come off a person's credit report as fast as they can so they can move to the next client. It's numbers. And most people are taught that way. I was taught that way in the very beginning. You know, you get as many people as possible, and then you count your money. I didn't initially get into this for money. You know, I got into it because I had a situation 22 years ago. Went to buy a home, got approved for it. I'm going to get a short version of it. Got approved for it. We're now 95% done with the house. The sales guy calls us up one day, and we go in, and the guy says that something popped up on our credit. Now, at this point, I don't know nothing about credit other than the fact that I know we were approved. That's what I knew. And he says, time frame, we were about 2 weeks before closing. And because of that time frame, he said, in order for us to still close in that two-week time frame, because that negative item popped up on our credit, we had to come up with $50,000 to still close. It's the only way the deal would get done. This was probably one of the first and only times in my life that I have felt completely hopeless. I didn't know what to do. I didn't even know a question to ask other than, well, is there something else we can do? And the guy says, you just hunch the shoulders. And, I mean, if a person ever went through a process of buying a home, picking a brick, you pick your lots, You pick the brick color. You pick the cabinets, the type of color of the cabinets. You did all of that stuff, right? So you put a little something in it. You had a little vested equity in it, right? So all of a sudden, it get pulled up underneath you without no good reason other than something popped up on our credit. And from that point forward, I was on that mission to never be in that position again. If you're going to tell me no, you better have good doggone reason why it's no. Because nobody will be able to ever tell me just no. I don't care what it is. And I fight with a lot of people, the city, the state, the police, you know, because I'm just not that person that's just going to take what you say. You don't demand and control how I roll. Don't work that way. You know, everybody, you know, they're people. They're people with just different titles. That's all. I feel
absolutely.
No,
absolutely. A lot of times we take what people say on face value and we never challenge
that's
that.
It.
We never
that's
do
it.
It. Yeah.
Yeah. Because you don't know how to, right? Because if it's a police officer, you're going to take his word or her word for it. If it's maybe your pastor, if it's somebody's senior executive at the office, management, whatever the case might be, you take what they say for face value, like you said, but challenge them on it and see what happens. Challenge them. It's not being rude if you challenge somebody. If you don't agree with something, you don't agree with it. How many people that's married don't agree with their spouse? They boyfriend, girlfriends. You don't have to agree and be angry about what you don't agree with, as long as you do it respectfully. Not to mean you just go pop off, you know. Because even when I first started doing, getting involved with doing the phone calls and things like that, I do a lot of phone calls with people. A lot of people don't like doing that, but I do. Because I get a chance to be able to talk to somebody who don't know what the devil they're talking about. Like I just did last week, and the lady was like, I asked just one question, and I'm talking to her just like this. And she says, hold on, let me get my supervisor. I was like, dang, she didn't let me beat her up at all. She just bounced. She was gone.
she had just a little taste, and that was enough.
Yeah, just take a couple of these blows I'm about to give you. But there are questions. You know, I was taught a long time ago, if you don't understand something, ask. I don't care if you say it because people say, well, I know the question to ask. Think of something. If something does not make sense to you, know that other voice we always hear, it's just like, you know, something told me. We'll never know what something is. My grandmother told me a long time ago, he said that something is always God. That's your first mind. Go with that.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Absolutely.
And sometimes that's all that it is. You ask enough questions to you for it to make sense to you, not to them, to you.
Absolutely. Yeah, I know I always use the term clarity.
Mm-hmm.
Can you clarify what you said?
Yeah,
yeah, I need clarity. I just want to make sure that I understand completely what you said. Can you clarify that for me?
That's it. That's it. Make them show you enough, you know, like I said, I'm okay with no, but not just no. You have to make sure I'm real clear. I'm okay with no as long as I'm understanding why you're telling me no. That's it. And I think that's how people should kind of look at certain things. You know, you can't say, oh, no, you can't do this. Why? Just no, you can't. Why? Explain to me so I can understand. So like you said, let me get some clarity on why you're saying no. Then I'll go away.
Yeah, you're not going away that easy. So.
No.
But for us regular consumers, I can say, as yes, you know, when I was younger, you know, I had stuff and I was like any other consumer. Okay,
mm-hmm.
Well, what is it? How much do I owe? Oh, can I have a payment plan? Oh, okay, well, yeah, I guess I'll go ahead and I'll pay it. Some things I did notice, you know, once I started to get my life and credit and stuff together and
mm-hmm.
paying those old debts, but noticing on the credit report that it's not updating. Okay,
right.
I paid it, but it didn't update. Now, how can you help with that? What can a consumer do after they just say on good faith will, they did pay the debt, it still shows on the credit report, is that something that can be removed, or what is the process for that?
Well, a couple things. One, let's say you had an account. You charged it off. It got charged off on you. You know, life happened, and you came back, okay, and you decide that you paid it. So now that you paid it, on your credit report, it now says that it's a zero balance, right? Zero balance, but yet it still has negative marks on it. So, for example, do you think that your light company cares who pays your light bill, whether it's you or me? They don't care,
nope.
Right?
Nope.
You still get credit for it. Well, whenever you pay your bill, on your credit report, it should be marked that it's a satisfactory mark. When you paid that account that you hadn't paid in, say, 6 months or a year, what now happens is on your report, it's called a payment status error. So a lot of times the companies don't make the correction in the status of the account. It'll still say charged off / collection, 180, you know, 150 or whatever the case might be. Then in some cases, again, you look at the history on the account at the bottom. It'll say the 2-year history. So if you paid it, say, August 1st of 2021, it might say your last time making a payment was way before that, and the negative mark is still a 180 or 150 or whatever on your credit report. Those are errors. So that means if you just paid it in August but you hadn't paid it in 6 months, your last entry should say okay or a positive mark, not a negative one. The status should also reflect the fact that you already say zero because you paid it, then that means that last status should say okay or paid. So those are considered, you know, payment status errors. So a lot of times we'll just look at the fact that, okay, well, I paid it off. Now it says zero, and that's fine.
Okay, so what happens when that doesn't happen? What are our next steps with that?
You have to go and dispute it. Once you dispute it as such, because you're going to basically let them know, let the bureaus know. See, we have to stop doing these single disputes like it's inaccurate, it's not mine, especially that, and unless it's really not yours, and, you know, things that don't really say anything. So when you just say, okay, well, this stuff is incomplete, it's inaccurate, it's not accurate, blah, blah, blah. Okay, what about it is not accurate? What are you saying? So when you do your dispute reason to it, give them a story, right? Give them the story of what it is, right? What I say is write it to the courts. Write it to the courts. Write it at the court. If it gets to that point, the judge now sees it. So your dispute reason, you're telling them that, hey, listen, this account is zeroed out. I paid it. This is a copy of the credit report that shows the imperfections in it. It says that it's still negative. It doesn't reflect the last time I made a payment, right? And yet they're still marking me as a negative account with just a zero balance. Accounts need to be put as paid as agreed or paid. Updated, because what's happening is you're missing points. You didn't get points for the update on the credit to say that it was good. You want your points.
You absolutely. Every point counts.
Yeah. But sometimes if you happen to get it removed and that account has history on it, you could potentially lose points from it. So it's kind of a dual-edged sword. So the negative account is gone, but you lose the history of the points that you've had with the account. If you've had it for a year or two, you'll lose all of that if the bureaus remove it. Now, you can build it back up, but you would lose it, and you would have, you know, you wouldn't have the negative mark there at all. But you can definitely have them to fix it. If not, there is litigation ways that you can actually get that rectified for yourself, either get it paid like it's supposed to and or get it paid and get you paid.
So let's talk about that. So mm-hmm. When we have these situations that come about, hey, you went ahead, you paid it, it hasn't updated yet, you know, you have put a request in to have it updated. So when you put that request in, does the credit bureau send it back to the actual creditor or to the debt collection agency? Like, who gets that request to make that update or to verify that update, I will say?
Okay. Well, in that situation, it wouldn't be a creditor, a debt collection situation. It'd be a creditor situation. So that would go directly to that creditor. Now, here's the deal. You could potentially have both of them on the hook, the creditor and the credit bureau. Because the credit bureau has to do its own due diligence to make sure that they do a proper investigation. So if the company, so that's why I said that you would send even a little screenshot, a snapshot of what you were speaking of on that particular item, the bureaus have a right to do their due diligence as well. If the creditor comes back and says, oh, it's verified, doesn't mean it's verified just because they say it. You have to investigate it. And here's the proof. And it's here. I'm talking about this thing right here, and you say it's verified. How is it verified if the credit report says otherwise? So now the bureaus potentially are on the hook as well. So two people have to make sure that the information is correct. If the other side, if the creditor does not send something back to the bureaus and say, hey, listen, this information, this is what it's supposed to be, and correct it, the bureaus could be on the hook for it, as well as that creditor. So we have to just make sure that both sides are saying the same thing.
So as a consumer, how can we verify that they are both saying the same thing?
You know before them, right? So and the fact that you use the word verify, the hard part, because nobody, and I mean nobody, can verify your information without your consent. Because there's no way that the credit bureaus can contact your creditor without your consent and say, hey, did Tiki pay our bill on time? Right? I can't call your bank and they tell me what your balances are, can they? Without consent. So what makes you think that these other companies can actually verify your information without going through the proper channels? They're not on your credit accounts, not even on the ones that's bad. So how can they verify it? That's really the question. They cannot. And a lot of people in the industry, they use the terminology validation. We all have done that. Nobody can validate or verify your information without you. They just can't. When tax liens used to be on a person's credit report, there was a thing that that I had gotten from the Federal Trade Commission, and was an opinion letter. And in that letter, because most attorneys write these, so in that letter, it basically was somebody asking a question. And one of the questions they asked was that very thing about verifying. So back then, they said tax liens was public record. Your taxes are not public record, right? I think Donald Trump showed everybody that. It's not public. So how is it that someone can contact the IRS about somebody else's taxes, their personal taxes, and then get an explanation from it without that person's consent? They can't.
They can.
So what that did was, it said this attorney wrote back and said that they don't have permission to get that information from them without your consent. And if they persistently try and do it and then get it for some unknown reason, you can say that they were then impersonating you, which becomes a federal crime. So how do you think your information is given to somebody without your consent?
I don't know.
Right.
I don't know.
The thing is, though, See, these individuals, in my opinion, have arrangements with each other, right? Because you think about it just simply, how is it that the credit bureaus can tell that your stuff is verified, but they won't show you any documentation, won't show you no proof of anything. They just say it's verified. How was that verified? And how did you get it? I guarantee you this, and I want anybody who's listening to this to go do this. Contact your bank. Just your regular, where you get your banking at. Just go call them up and ask them this one thing. Ma'am, sir, can you tell me who the authorized parties on my account? And if so, can you send it to me in writing? Do it. And I guarantee you the only authorized party that's going to be on there is you and whoever else you have on your account. That's the only authorized parties, not Equifax, TransUnion, or Experian. So that same company, that same bank that you're with, you happen to have a bunch of overdrafts, and it went into collections. Nah, that collector got it, okay, because the bank sold it off. How are you contacting the bank to know if that overdraft is accurate? You sent me this letter a long time ago saying that I was the only authorized party. So who are you releasing this information to? And I guarantee you the bank is not releasing it to anybody. But
okay.
We kind of go with that.
Yes, we do.
Yeah.
So then if they're unable to then verify this information, so then what is my next step as a consumer then? If they can't verify that I made the payment or the date that I made it, or any of that information. So now what? Now what do I do?
Well, your next step, if you've done everything that you think you can do, then you'd have to find somebody, attorney-wise, who will be willing to potentially take your case, because now your case would be based on inaccurate information that's being reported. So if the balances are not right, if the dates are not correct, there's parts of the account on your credit report don't have fields in them. Doesn't tell you how much the monthly payments were. They don't tell you what the terms were, right? Cars are notorious for being reported wrong. If you go to an actual dealership to buy a car, but on your paperwork, on your paperwork from the dealership, it doesn't tell you that you have an auto loan. It tells you that you have a retail contract. But on your credit report, it'll say auto loan or installment. Like, which is it? Only your paperwork that you get identifies what it is, and only your paperwork from a dealership will never say an auto loan on it. But your credit report will. So you have to make sure that that information is correct and then take it to somebody that would be able to, you know, potentially help you with that, to make sure they either do one thing, correct it, or pay you for it.
So let's talk about pay, because I like money. So just say all of this happens. So Tiki goes through all of these steps that you just said, and, hey, they can't verify this debt. And so happened I come to you, because this is what your company does that can help me. What are our next steps then? What do I need to do now to pursue payment against these credit bureaus for all of this inaccurate information?
Well, what I would do is I would then turn you over to one of the attorneys that we work with. And again, it's going to be at no additional cost to you. That attorney will look at that and say, hey, I think this is a good case. He or she would then contact you individually. You guys work out an arrangement. You sign off on the paperwork. They take it from there. It's pretty much just like that. Now, time frames, those could vary. They could be from as little as 30 to 45 days until 6 to 9 months. Just kind of depends on the severity of the case. What we really want people to start doing, I'm never going to be against somebody helping you. If you're a credit repair company, you know, or something like that, that's going to help a person. The thing of it is that you need to also know and recognize what they might not recognize. And then ask them, hey, do you guys do this? Don't care if you don't want to do it and you're okay with paying, that's fine. But know what it is that they should be doing based on the approach that you want them to take. But what we do is we drop everything in somebody else's lap and want them to do everything for us and have no idea how it really works. So you should know, looking at your credit report, if you see debt collection accounts on there, you should know that more than likely that could be a problem if you do it the right way. If you see accounts where an individual has paid off an account, still showing negative information there, you should know that that might be a problem. If you see something on your credit report that could be a debt collection account, but yet the account that they're collecting for might not be yours, that may be considered identity theft. Okay? It could be a mistake, but it could be identity theft as well. Right? Or you see accounts that's on your file that you don't recognize. Not that you don't remember, because sometimes we just forget, and, you know, depending on how old something might be, but at the end of the day, recognize those things. You might not know how to fix it, but recognize that. So now when you're talking to that person, you say, hey, look, what about this account right here? Because I've never lived here before, and I see this on my account, this address, but then I'm noticing around that time frame, I'm looking at this account popped up on there too. So I'm not too sure about that. This could be somebody used my information, right? At least know those things going in, right? What we do is, mm-hmm. what I hear all the time is people say, Ken, don't judge me. Because they're saying this stuff is really bad. When I'm looking at your credit report, I'm looking at opportunities for you, right? We all have blemishes on the credit reports,
uh-huh.
everybody, to some degree, right? The bad part about those things is keeping that stuff, being quiet about it. No, don't be afraid about it. Shout it at the mountaintops and say, listen, man, look, I need this up off of here. Can you help me? Cool. Let me first explain to you, because most consumers don't. We just know it's wrong or bad. And I want it off. But let me tell you the good and the bad. Because sometimes, even when I purchased my house, I still had a couple negative things on my credit. But they was 2-plus years old. I didn't have to go get it off. You see? So anything that you see negative on your credit report, don't look at it like it's a death sentence. Look at it as a potential opportunity. You can contact somebody like me or someone in, you know, that's, you know, in this field of business and have them to help you. If they're not giving you what you need, you could always come back to us at Credit Education Group. We'll help you out.
Well, that is awesome. This has been some really great, great information, because I know, even for my own personal self, dealing with, in the past, I've dealt with debt collectors. And I've read a little bit of some of the laws, but not many, you know, just some basic mm-hmm. things. But if I would have been educated and had some of the knowledge that you've just given us, you know, definitely would have had a different outcome on a couple of things that I may have had. And mm-hmm. so I think it's very, very important for us to be truly educated, because a lot of times we get swindled out of things because we don't have the knowledge, you know, we just don't have that basic knowledge and understanding, especially when it comes to credit. I know I see this a lot
right.
in real estate, since I've been in real estate, just us understanding the basics of credit, how to manage money, you know, how to manage our credit. So it is great that you offer that credit education, because, you know, cash is king, but credit is power at times.
Credit is power.
You know, depending
yeah.
on the situation that you're in. And so, you
yeah.
know, it is definitely important for us to be educated in this arena here so that we can continue to grow, you know, our legacy, we can build our generational wealth, and that, you know, we
right.
can have the lives that, you know, God definitely has desired for us to have, you know. So
exactly.
I am super excited about the second hour, what we'll be talking about. Dr. Robinson, if you'd like, we can go to a break or open up for questions and answers.
Okay, well, we'll open up for some questions and answers. People have been holding for a while. We're going to open up 417-569. 417-569, you're on with Mrs. T.K. Williams and Mr. Kenneth LaRouf. LaMomph, I'm sorry. Sorry, brother. Sorry about that.
No problem.
Are you there, 417-569? Your mic is open. Unmute yourself. Okay, we'll go to 718-350. 718-350. You're on with Mr. Kenneth Lamont and Mrs. Tiki Williams. 718-350. Your mic is open.
Yes, give thanks. So Mr. Lamont and Ms. Williams, this is Ari Robinson. Didn't catch the very beginning.
Okay.
I've worked in mercantile and consumer credit for like 30 years. And I've worked and taught at Dun & Bradstreet, worked for mercantile and UNESCO, worked in the head of credit and collection divisions. This thing about collection and liens years ago, you can, in New York, under Koch, you can buy the liens, you know, the housing liens, all right? And as long as you hold them for 2 years and the debtor does not pay, you can own that property, all right? And still, under Koch, his deputy mayor at the time formed a corporation to deal with liens. No one other than his two buddies could handle the liens. They had a monopoly on buying these houses, holding them, and then selling liens. In consumer credit, though, here you have a debt that's owed, and they try to collect it for a certain period of time until they write it off on their books, and they sell it to a collection agency at 25% of the value of the loan. All right? And okay. Then the debt collector, the loan, I've worked with him too. The collection agency continues to attempt to collect that debt. All right.
Okay.
And as they're on this, depending on how much of the debt they collect, then they write it off again and sell it to 25% to somebody else.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. Because once you go into adjudication, you know, on these loans and so on, the company can write off the loss.
Buddy.
You know, because you have credit insurance and stuff.
I love you too, honey.
You can write off the loss and sell it to anybody. And then the person you're selling it to can hold it for a little while until they can only hold it on their books for so long.
Okay,
and then they sell it to somebody else.
What do you need?
And so before you know it,
your
3 and 4 and 5 tiers down to somebody else trying to collect the debt for the amount of the debt. And then when you touch base with them, they say, well, listen, we can make arrangements.
I will.
If you pay me now, you know, we can cut off 30% of this debt.
Okay.
And if you can pay me in full, you know, we'll discount this debt 30%, 50%, you know, so on. So, but, you know, you get communication companies do that, Verizon and all that, because they can't hold this stuff on their books for so long. You know, and so on.
Right.
And then if it goes so long, you know, statute of limitations, you know, runs out and they can't do anything. They will continue to try to collect that, which is illegal. But this is it. I was listening and I like what you said with regard to how you respond to these people, because I virtually do the same thing.
Mm-hmm.
Who are you? Who are you? What do I owe you? I don't know you. You know, Sammy, well, Mr. Robinson, we started sending you letters and stuff, but I never received anything. You know, Send me it again.
Let me correct a couple things.
Yeah.
Let me correct a couple things right quick. The
the idea of statute of limitations that you were saying, there is no statute of limitation as far as collecting. They can collect. There's a statute of it being reported on your credit and or being sued. Like in our state of Texas, it's 4 years. Other states, it's as high as 10.
Yeah.
So I'm not talking about New York and things like that. Yeah. But the one thing I want to say, and I really want people to understand this. Now, when you start to understand debt and what you call debt, a debt collection company, you never have a debt with. And I know we just use that verbiage because that's just what it is. But it's not a debt. When the original creditor decides that they were going to go ahead and stop coming after you, so you were right in what you said. So the law says that there's up to 180 to 120 days, depending on if it's a revolving or or a installment type of account. They have to stop collecting.
Mm-hmm.
They have to. Problem is, doesn't stop them from suing you. You see, they can still sue you. So it's almost like that mandate doesn't exist if they can still have an opt out to come and sue you.
Yes.
Right. So the idea of what it is not a debt when the person who extended credit to you decided that they had to cut it off.
Yeah, got to cut it off. Okay.
The other person who buys it, they're not buying a debt, but they call them debt buyers. You can't buy debt. Debt can only be extended that creates it. So you can't buy it. So all the thing that they're purchasing is that information. It's not a debt. Hence, this is why you then question them the way that you do. That's why I said earlier, don't talk about what something was, but when you're talking to me, we're talking about what something is.
What the something is. Okay. All right. Right.
They're saying that you now owe them. How?
Mm-hmm.
What was the terms of our arrangement? Oh, no, you didn't owe us anything. Oh, okay, well, goodbye.
Okay. All right. Gotcha. Thank you.
Yeah.
And what's the name of your company, sir?
It's Credit Education Group.
Credit Education Group?
Yes, sir.
And you're located?
I'm in Texas. I'm in the Dallas, Fort Worth area of Texas. Yeah, we're on all social media platforms and under Credit Education Group.
That's wonderful. I enjoy really listening to you. Thank you for your correction. And sometimes I get caught up make a statement that incorrect statement that I use the wrong words, but I understand.
Yeah. Yeah, but you understand what's happening. I said, but you understand what's happening.
Yes. Credit Education, that's good.
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And we're going to open up the mic of 914-979. You're on with Mrs. Kiki Williams and Mr. Kenneth Lamont. 914-979, your mic is open.
Can you hear me now?
Yes, sir.
Okay, great. Yeah, this is a good opportunity because one of the things that is a problem with a lot of people, especially since the COVID has come in, is that a lot of people have really going down on their credit. And being that they have, you know, the question is, how can they bounce back, you know? And some of the things that you had mentioned are some good opportunities for people to really consider and take a look at in regards to utilizing that to get their credit back up and running.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some of the programs that are out here are pretty good, too. And I'm not sure if you're familiar with one. It's a gentleman spoke with me about it. I didn't have that with him as of yet. But one of the things that he was saying is that, you know, because of the COVID situation, that there are, you know, now funds where you could actually get your credit cut in half you know, on what you owe. And then the portion that you owe, you could also get that paid off as well. And I was like, what? Really? I said, that sounds great. I said, yeah, I'll talk with you some more about that. So I said, good. But different programs like that are very helpful because, like, one of the reasons why a lot of people's credits are down right now because folks have lost their businesses, they lost their jobs, and, you know, the economy just crashed, you know, for a minute there.
Right.
So, you know, when you do have different ways that you can, you know, financially pay off your debt, and it doesn't necessarily have to come out your wallet or your purse, then basically these are things that can be very helpful as well. And I was wondering if you also, with your program, do you guys deal with any kind of programs like that?
I hadn't heard anything like that, and I'm not sure if it's just basically how you were describing it, but I can't see how that works because it didn't really make sense to me. And I'm not saying you're wrong or it's wrong. I'm not sure. But what I do know and understand is just that if you couldn't pay a credit card or loan or something like that, that there's a program that's out there that will put you in a position to pay part of it and then make you still pay another part or get it either, forgiven kind of thing, maybe. But if that is the case, then they might hit you back up with a 1099 later and make you tax it.
When you say 1099, what's that?
Mm-hmm. Well, 1099 is basically when a lot of times a debt is what they call forgiven, basically telling you don't owe it anymore. But then they'll send you a 1099, a 1099-C for the cancellation of the debt and tell you that you have to now put that balance in your taxes, okay, which is not income. Just so you know and understand that. So anytime anybody ever gets a 1099 from a debt, don't file that on your taxes because that's not income.
Mm-hmm.
There's an IRS
form
that's available. I just want to put that out there that you can get rid of that. Because a lot of people do get those, especially now you're going to start getting them. Because they might come in a way that you're saying it's kind of like, oh, it's going to be forgiven. Stimulus money, you're paying it back. in some form or fashion, we're paying that back, right?
Mm.
So be careful of things like that. You know, read that fine print to make sure that it won't bounce back on you later because you can always go in and negotiate with your creditors and say, hey, listen, I'm having a hardship. Sometimes they may even tell you, well, we don't have a hardship program at this time. And they want you to pay it. Like, well, I can't. Okay, well, this is what it is. All right, cool. Then, I mean, you know, do what you do. Because sometimes you just can't. And then you find yourself in a situation that's worse if you had done nothing than jumping on board with something thinking it's going to be a fix, and it puts you in a worse position. So be careful of stuff like that. And I'm not saying that this is one of those things. I don't know. I hadn't really heard of that before. But I'm now you piqued my interest, so I'm gonna shop around and see, make a few phone calls to some people and see if they've ever heard anything like that because I hadn't.
Well, I could get back to you once I speak to the gentleman that I spoke to, and he said we could test it out and see if it sounds like something that's for real or whether it's something that even if it is for real that it's not detrimental at the same time that has. Two sides of what it can do. It can help you out for now, but it can hurt you later on. So, from what you're saying, so let's see what happens, and hopefully, there was a fee that you did have to pay to get involved with that program, and you know that was it wasn't that expensive. But the bottom line was that you know once you got involved with that, you know they said that they were going to be able to take and erase. You know, whatever debt you owed on, you know, different things that, whether it was your credit cards or different things that you owed money on, you know, in the past.
Mm-hmm.
So I was like, wow, that sounds pretty good. But yeah, I'm definitely going to check into it because, you know, I didn't really look into it that seriously before. But if it is something that's legit and something that could be helpful, that would be good to definitely utilize that to help you to get yourself up and running again, whether it's your business, whether it's your personal credit or, you know, whatever that situation is, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. Yeah, reach out to me.
Okay. Yeah, I'll definitely do that. Mm-hmm.
Okay, appreciate it.
Yes, indeed. Keep up the good work.
Thank you.
Mr. Kenneth Lamont, maybe you want to give out, like, your contact information, your websites, you know, things of that sort.
Okay, yeah, no problem. I have a couple different sites you can reach me at. You can go directly to prelitigationreview.com. That's prelitigationreview.com. And you can reach me directly at my office at 817-200-7814. 817-200-7814.
Great. Okay, before we
said 817-200, what was the last four digits?
7814.
7814. Okay, great. Thank you.
Yes, sir. Okay.
So before we go to commercial break, we're going to try, you've been hanging on a long time there, 417-569. 417-569. Your mic is open. Are you unmuted? 417-569. Your mic is open. Holla. Say something. 417-569. Okay. Okay, then in that case, folks, we're going to take a commercial break, pay a little bill, come right back with Brother Kenneth Lamont. He's got some great ideas. I mean, I'm 71. I've been around a long time, and I didn't know none of the stuff that he's talking about, y'all. So...
Yeah,
I am so surprised, man. This is some heavy stuff. And I would suggest anybody you know that's in debt, that has credit problems, get them on the line tonight. This is great information. Okay, so everybody come back. We're going to go for a commercial break.
Yeah. Oh, entertainment. Worldwide. Network. We on live. We in your speakers. And on your mind. 10 o'clock. 10 o'clock. We on time.
Yes, this is Lenny Williams. I'm out here in Oakland, California.
I'm Lisa Lay. I sign on a payment with the NWA, Dr. Dre, and Eazy-E.
It's Just Will, Black Pearl Entertainment artist, newly signed to I Am Jesus Records. You're listening to the Entertainment Worldwide Network with Don Jr., CEO. Coming to you live, this is business, so pay attention.
Yo, it's your boy LV the Slap Fiend, and I'm over here chilling with my guy, The Plug, Don Jr., CEO, Entertainment Worldwide Network Radio. You dig?
What's good, homie? This your boy, Big D.
It's your folk, Checking Traps.
This your piece, Captain Mac.
I let your boy, Bossalina.
It's your boy, Brick Boy Rico.
It's your boy, Joe Dirt.
Hey, yo, what up? It's your boy, Buddha, a.k.a. Buddy Mouse.
Yo, what's good? It's the Vic Percy Jones.
And Big Cell is now in your area.
Yo, this your boy, Mr. Hamston.
It's your girl, Lady Duet.
It's just Rich Gates.
This your bro, JT, Mr. Guaranteed the Rick.
Yo, this your dude, Insane G.
What up? This your boy, Jihad, a.k.a. J Hood.
Yo, this your folks, Young Birds.
Yo, this your folk, GB. Cooley.
Yo, this is Mike G Jungle. Hey, what it do? It's your boy Size Money.
This your boy Big Chad Domingo.
Bye bye. Salute the big dog.
This your boy J Futuristic.
This your folk Lil Raheem. You did.
I am Geronimo Beals. Off the deep end, getting blessings. Wise Life Records, and you're listening to the Entertainment Worldwide Network with Don Jr., the CEO, coming to you live.
Hey, what it do? This is Charlie Boy, the Versatile Charlie.
You're listening to the hottest radio station.
Are you ready to be inspired, uplifted, enlightened, and entertained? Judge Joe Brown is an all-American judge, lawyer, and television personality. Judge Joe Brown was raised in the Crenshaw District of Los Angeles, California. Overcoming the harsh streets of L.A., he graduated at the top of his class from Dorsey High School. He then went on to earn his bachelor's degree in political science at UCLA. Judge Joe Brown is a member of the Phi Alpha fraternity and became the first African-American prosecutor in Memphis, Tennessee. He then opened his own practice before becoming a judge on the State Criminal Court of Shelby County, Tennessee. Judge Joe Brown was then thrust busted into the national spotlight for sitting over James Earl's last appeal for race conviction for the assassination of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. He then caught the attention of producers of Judge Judy and is now the arbiter of his own arbitration-based reality court TV show that has been recorded for over 16 years. This show is syndicated on Bounce and available to millions of homes across America. Judge Joe Brown has been on a mission to educate the leaders of the future and has started a movement titled Sag Pants Equals a Sag Mind. This is a call to action. Let's talk and change the world. Judge Joe Brown is ready to speak at your next event. Follow Judge Joe Brown at Judge Joe Brown TV on Twitter. This message has been brought to you by 2Deep, owner of KFSM Radio and Bloody Rain Productions, and Pastor Don Jr., CEO of The Winning Team. Contact 2Deep at 337-936-5176 or Pastor Don Jr. at 818-358-5722.
The NEO Project is a business network collective of professional CEOs, community leaders, doctors, recording artists, label owners, lawyers, judges, business owners, entrepreneurs, recording artists, and major connections across the globe. For more information, visit www.myprojectneo.org or call 800-249-8830. We have a live conference call, Join in the Conversation, hosted by Dr. Rev Robinson Sr. and Dr. Winborn. Share your ideas about growing your business. New ideas, featured partner, video promo, social media, exposure, rotation, profit sharing, meetups at your establishment. Join the conference call on Blog Talk Radio Thursday and Friday, 7 p.m. East Coast, 4 p.m. West Coast time. Sunday, 7 p.m. East Coast, 4 p.m. West Coast time, Live Talk with Eva. Call 347-857-1311. Press 1 to speak on freeconferencecall.com. Saturday, 12 p.m. East Coast, 4 p.m. West Coast time. Call into 515-604-9642. Access code 910488. If you have Metro PCS, hashtag T-Mobile, or Boost Mobile, call 206-451-6043. Then 515-604-9642. Access code 910488. If you have Metro PCS, T-Mobile, or Boost Mobile, dial 206-451-6043. Then 515-604-9642. Access code 910488. Financial consulting and investments, call DSNR Consultants LLC Corporate Office, 914-363-9007. Text 518-866-7605. Email RevRunRobinson, RevRun11@gmail.com. Shout out to Pastor Don Jr., CEO, and Keisha Miss, CEO, the 300 Elite members, also 3 Max and a Nerd, and Andrea's Talent Management.
Fashion is SoSeductiveLive.com. Log on to SoSeductiveLive.com. SoSeductiveLive has the best apparel from Gucci, Prada, Fendi, Guess, Rolex, Nike, Tiara Michelle, True Religion, Louis Vuitton.
Greetings, I'm Miss K, CEO and founder of SoSeductive Shoes and Fashion. I started my company to keep you informed. Log on to SoSeductiveLive.com. I believe in fashion, so SoSeductive is fun and needs to be seen. I want to inspire people just like you. I want someone to look at me and say, because of you, I didn't give up. Log on to SoSeductiveLive.com. I am Miss K, CEO and founder of SoSeductive Shoes and Fashion. You can find me on your favorite social network at Keisha Miss CEO. Log on to SoSeductiveLive.com.
There's a lot to learn in the music business, and without a teacher, it gets even harder and very costly. Introducing the Green Dragon Record Breaking Blueprint. Don Jr., CEO of the Entertainment Worldwide Network, has put together a detailed book to take your career to the next level in the entertainment business. The Green Dragon Record Breaking Blueprint will teach you the do's and don'ts of the entertainment industry, starting from the beginning to the end. The Green Dragon Record Breaking Blueprint covers the topics of business plan, logo design, CD design layout, sales, radio airplay, CD marketing strategy, massive emailing, CD sales one sheet, press kit, media kit, online media kit, internet marketing, MP3 online distribution, hip-hop blog sites, hip-hop magazines, hip-hop DVDs, mixtapes, street teams, music publishing and royalties, music lawyers, tour booking, and more. The Green Dragon Record Breaking Blueprint is available only by contacting Don Jr., CEO, at 818-358-5722 or email donjrceo@gmail.com.
Do you need more exposure? Do you need more fans? Are you planning to be wealthy and successful in business? The 365 Days of Radio campaign is a business training program teaching you how to build your brand, business, product, or service. How to meet and network with people in other cities. how to make connections with other business owners, and how to talk about your business on an open platform. All the tools you need before you speak to investors, advertisers, and or sponsors. Are you ready to receive money and make it to the next level? Education is the key to success, and experience is the best teacher. Learn from the comfort of your own personal remote location. The 365-day radio campaign is a business training program. For business training, tuition, schedules, and fees, please call Pastor John Jr., CEO, and the winning team at 818-358-5722. That's right, Pastor John Jr., CEO of the winning team at 818-358-5722.
You don't need to have a philosophical bent to grasp. There are three little words. We want to let the world know that these words describe what we mean and what we are determined to do about racial injustice. One is the word all. We don't want some of our rights. We don't want a few token handouts here and there. We want all of our rights. Telling us to slow up. We can hear voices telling us to cool up. Our only answer in conversation turn must be that we have cooled off too long, and if we keep cooling off, we'll end up in a deep freeze. We must go on and say, no, what we are saying to this nation is that we want all of our rights. We want them here.
What your life can truly be. Shine and stop for you to see. What your life can truly be.
We live in dangerous times, and you never know when you'll need a lawyer. Introducing Legal Shield. Get legal help 24/7. For over 47 years, people from all walks of life have joined our community and our mission to empower and protect. Wait, there's more! Become a sales associate and watch your commission grow with every sale. We are working together to change the negatives into positives. Business owners, entrepreneurs, recording artists, and major corporations all across the globe. We focus on business education, advertising, so that everyone can see the return on their investment. Visit our website at robinsonir38.wearelegalshield.com or for more information, contact Dr. Ron Robinson at 914-363-9007 or 203-515-7167 or 914-530-5876. Again, visit us at our website at www.robinsonir38.wearelegalshield.com. RobinsonR38.WeAreLegalShield.com.
And we are back, and we want to give a couple of service announcements. Don't forget, people, the petition for the rights for black farmers. Brother Ronald Pathier had put together the understanding of the natural energy that's coming, solar energy that's going to the farmers. And they will get many, many financial subsidies and economic development. And we want you to go to Positive, P-O-S-I-T-I-V-E, Change, C-H-A-N-G-E-P-C.com, positivechange.com. There is a petition on the site to sign. We're trying to get, you know, 3 million, 4 million, 5 million of people to sign this petition, which states that 35% of the $2.3 trillion is going down for the development of solar energy. And what they're going to do is they're going to give farmers these subsidies. They're going to subsidize the universities and the colleges. That means the students can get a two-year, four-year, six-year ride totally free if they study this technology, they study this industry, whether it's a technologist or a person that's going to be an engineer or an architect in this particular industry can get a full ride in the universities and colleges. And we want the historical black colleges to get the money as well. So we need you, ma'am, you, sir, to go to the site Positive, P-O-S-I-T-I-V-E, Change, C-H-A-N-G-E-P-C.com. Go to the petition. On the site, you're going to read about blacks in solar energy development, companies that's around the world, black corporations that are developing this solar energy, and they need to get supported, and they need to be economic development. And this money needs to go to our communities. This money can help develop your community, clean it up, better parks, better services, better sanitation, better police, better medical services. It can change a whole community. So we want you to go to that positivechangepc.com and sign that petition, and make sure this go around, we'll get this money. Biden promised the black farmers that he would get them a subsidy because under Trump, they did not get the subsidy. They got messed up, and they didn't get the subsidy, and he promised he would do it, and then he reneged on it. And so we have to make sure that the black farmers are getting the subsidy that they need, because we need organic foods and vegetables, and we need in our communities better food. And that's how you get it. You get it when you got good farmers. So go to the site, sign up, get the petition, learn about solar energy and how it's going to economically change this country, and find out how you can get involved as well. So we want you to remember that. We also want you to go to My Project, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, NEO, N-E-O, .org. Go to the reparations program, sign up, and find whether it's $8, $10, $20, $100, $100,000. Sign up for the reparations program so the economics can stay in the black community. Our dollar circulates 3, 2, 4, 1 hour, and it's gone. Okay, we want to change that economic dilemma where the money can stay in the community more, and we can develop our small businesses, which will give the local people jobs. And also, why when you do that, the bonus is the Black Billionaires Network Club, the Black Business Billionaires Network Club, which I happen to be the founder. We will help your business get funding from $50,000 to $250,000. And we're not going to ask you for, brothers on right now, we're not going to ask you for your credit score. We're not going to ask you for your history. We're not going to ask you for financial statements. We are going to basically finance your business based on its ability to accumulate funds over a period of time. And based on that scenario, we will assist you. So you go on to myprojectneo.org, what we call Blacklisted, which is the Black Shark Tank that we have developed now, where the major big black businesses are supporting the smaller black businesses for economic development in the black community. You'll get yourself blacklisted, and you can go on the applications on the site, and you can sign up, and you can get this funding. So it's MyProject, P-R-O-J-E-C-T, NEO, N-E-O, .org. Sign up for the reparations program. Get your business, or even if it's a intellectual property, an idea that you have, get blacklisted, get to the Black Shark Tank, and get the funding. That's why it's going to work out. So we're happy, ma'am and sir, to assist you. And this is all 50 states. The opportunity is all 50 states. So we want you to not to forget to go over there to myprojectneil.org, get in the reparations program, get blacklisted, go to the Black Shark Tank, the Black Business Billionaires Network Club, and get your financial assistance from that point on. So we're doing economic development in the community. So we thank you, and we appreciate you. And now back to Mrs. Tiki Williams and Mr. Kenneth Lamont, and we're talking about credit, how important it is, and how we can work it out.
Great. Well, you guys. All right. Well, thank you so much for coming back for the second half. If you guys have been on the first half, Mr. Kenneth Lamont has been amazing with the gems and knowledge that he has dropped. And so on the second half, we're going to talk a little bit more about the credit education part that his company offers and how we can be educated on how we need to use credit wisely and how we can use it more to our benefit. So we're going to welcome back Mr. Kenneth Lamont to the stage.
Yes, ma'am.
Hello, hello. Thank you again.
Yes, ma'am. I'm here. Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you.
Okay. Now, it's funny to listen that we're talking about these things right now, and it was almost kind of divine the way that I just happened to be looking at an email while on a break. So if you don't mind, I want to be able to share this right quick, if that's okay.
Yeah, go right ahead.
Okay, so this is why I'm saying understand and know why you talk to these companies. Let me show you what the company just did. Our federal regulator, CFPB, the Consumer Financial Protection Bureau, actually fined a company that's called, let me see where they are here. It's called FCO. So FCO is a debt collection company. It's called Fair Collections and Outsourcing. They just fined them $850,000 for the very thing I was just talking about. And
whoa.
For misrepresentation and failing to investigate identity theft. They just fined them $850,000. Here's the bad part about that. Nobody gets that money. None of the people that went through that issue got paid that $850,000. It went back to the government entity. So this is why I'm saying.
Oh. I'm sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, this is what I'm saying. Start paying attention to what's happening, because that $850 should have went back to those people. That's almost $1 million that they were fined. But it's for the same things, misrepresentation. They're telling you things that's not factually true. And this just happened. They filed the claim against them last year, and on the 17th of August, they passed the fine. They were fined based on their findings. And some of the things that they were talking about, failing to implement reasonable policies, failing to conduct reasonable investigations, continuing to furnish information about disputed accounts. That's what we're talking about. So it's like when you submit something to a debt collection company and you dispute it with them, they don't put it on your credit report. If they don't put it on your credit report that you dispute it, that's $1,000 potentially that's owed back to you just from that. This company just got fined for it.
So my question was that.
Mm-hmm.
So was it people made complaints against the company, or how did these allegations come about?
Yeah, that's the funny part. So different people, they start making complaints to the CFPB about a company, but then the CFPB says, okay, we're going to take actions. They take action against the company, but you don't get nothing from it. They told them that they were fined and had to fix some things. $850,000. If I researched this company, they're probably making millions, right? If not, almost billions of dollars a year What's 850,000? Doesn't fix the problem. So what we have to do is fix that problem amongst ourselves. Because, again, you can see where the money went. It didn't go back to the people that they misled. You see? They kept it.
Right.
They kept it.
So then
that.
As a consumer, could I then come to you? So say, for example, if this company, if I had dealt with this company, I find this out, could I then come to your company and say, hey, I just found this information out. Is there something that we could do? Could we then potentially, on my behalf, go file suit against them based upon these findings?
Well, you don't necessarily have to do those findings necessarily unless they apply to you. And again, of course, if you dealt with them or they dealt with you. Other than that, you can't kind of jump on a bandwagon unless it was some type of class action. But if they had, one of the things, like they said, was that they weren't marking it on a person's, on a consumer's credit report after a dispute. That's a simple deal. We do them every day, every single day. So when you start talking about how we fix things, you fix things by kind of start tapping these people's pockets. If enough of us come together and start doing that, then you'll start seeing change. Here's the problem. These people are regulated, but it's so many of us as consumers, there's not enough of us to understand what really happened to go after them. So what do we do? We go tell on them. We go tell to the CFPB. The CFPB says, all right, enough of y'all that said something, so let's go after them. And then everybody's thinking, oh, my God, yeah, didn't fix your problem, though.
Right. So that was my question to you. So that's my question to you with your company. Just say I did have interaction. I was one of the people that filed a complaint against this company. Could I then come to your company and say, look, I want to file personal suit against them because they did allegedly do A, B, and C as well?
Yeah, you can definitely use this as leverage.
Okay.
I can't say I can't say just because, you know, you can do that, but you definitely can use this for leverage because now it's been publicly known that these are the shenanigans they've been doing. So then now if we get one of our attorneys involved and they say, hey, look, this is what they've been doing, and so we know this for a fact because they just got sued and fined by the CFPB. So I sent them notice, and they didn't do such and such, or they did do such and such, which they weren't supposed to do. Now I want to get my piece. So we definitely can go after them for those things.
Okay,
yeah.
Great. So as a consumer, how do I get knowledgeable about type of situations here where if I do have some issues with my credit or I do have some debts that haven't been paid, what are some of the steps that as a consumer, you know, I can take? But, of course, contacting your company would be great, be number one. But just for basic knowledge, like what steps should I take to go look and see that I need to know as a consumer when dealing with a debt collector? Should I go look at my state laws? Should I go look at the federal?
Man, that's kind of a loaded question. A good question, though, but it's a couple different things, some of which what you just said. Because, see, the biggest issue with this is that the average consumer doesn't know what law to look up. They don't know what law issue is. So there are different individuals out there that might give you something. The easiest place, I'll tell you, is probably YouTube besides contacting us. But the issue is a lot of people that's out there, they're selling you on their ideology. They're not teaching you and educating you about the laws. We know a bunch of people. If any of the folks that's on here who know me know who I'm talking about. There's people that's in our industry. They prey on everybody. They prey on them,
yeah.
And it's really hard. If you don't get the actual details, but I can tell you like this, the FDCPA, which is the Fair Debt Collection Practices Act, governs all debt collectors. You can read it. You can Google it. It's not long. It's not a long read, and it's not, I won't say that it's easy, because a lot of it is kind of written in legalese, but you can read some of it. Our state, the state of Texas, I don't know about any other state, but the state of Texas has what's called the Texas Finance Code 392. Okay, that governs our state the same as the federal. It almost mirrors it word for word. Then we have on the creditor side, the FCRA, which is the Fair Credit Reporting Act, which governs like the credit bureaus and your creditors. That's a little bit harder to read. Those are the things that govern both creditors and debt collection companies, or those two things, FDCPA and FCRA. So you definitely can read them. I'll give you what's called, in other words, I'll give you that version of it because it is written in a way that you don't really get it if you don't kind of know the history behind it all.
Okay. So it really sounds it would be a lot easier for us consumers for us just really to come to you.
Yeah, or somebody like me, you know what I mean? Yeah, because it's, I won't sugarcoat it for you. I won't make it tell you that it's, oh, my God, yeah, you can just go pick up this book and you'll just get it. No, ma'am, no, sir. Because I know people that's been doing this stuff just as long as I have, and they still don't understand the statutes. They understand how to potentially help you fix the credit, but they don't understand the statutes that govern what you do. It's kind of like if I tell you, Tiki, I don't really like you. That's what I'm telling you. Okay, why? Based on what? Right? This is how we kind of fight. But then if I say, I don't owe you Mr. Debt Collector guy, let me tell you why. According to 15 U.S.C. 1692A4, it says this. Then 1692A5, it says that. Then if you continue to do this, according to 1692 subsection C, I have a right to do that. You see, that's how we should look at it, but that's not for everybody. That's just for people who really are interested in it. Most consumers are just interested in the results, which is fine. You know, that's just what it is. I became interested in the way that I did because somebody told me no and didn't give me a why. So I had to go figure out my why. When I started doing this 27 years ago, it wasn't nobody like me telling me how to do it. So everything,
right,
pretty much, for the most part, that I speak to people about, I've personally gone through it. So I'm not somebody who kind of looked at something and been through a course, kind of say, I went through a course of life. I had the bad credit. You know, I've had my cars repoed. I've gone through evictions before. I've done all of those things and had nobody to help me. I had to figure it out. And had money for attorneys. I had to figure it out. But every court case I've ever had to deal with, I've won them all. Because I had to figure it out. Nobody can tell your story better than you. Nobody. They can tell it different, but not better than you. You just have
Absolutely.
To know how to tell your story.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
I want to hit on one key thing, especially here. I see this a lot in Texas. And when you talk
mm-hmm.
about evictions, so something I noticed is that, you know, Texas does a little bit different when it comes to evictions. And
okay.
then what I've noticed in real estate is that sometimes, you know, people do break their leases because they go to buy a house or for whatever reason, they'll break their lease.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So just say I broke my lease 3 months before it's due. Okay. Now I move out. They immediately move somebody else in, but they charge
right.
me for those 3 months that I broke the lease. But mind you, someone's already living here. They're paying
mm-hmm.
the rent. They may have lost maybe a month. We'll just give them a month. But now they're charging me
right.
for the 3 months, and they continue to charge me other interest and fees. I always thought
mm-hmm.
that it seemed to be like illegal. Like, I did void a contract. I get that. But you're still getting paid from somebody else, and then I'm still paying you for an apartment that I'm not even in. So
mm-hmm.
any advice on that?
Well, you kind of hit it, though. The thing is this. They're double dipping. The law says that they have to mitigate their damages. You left early, and they put a lease out or put an ad out for your apartment at this point. Like you said, next month, somebody in it. What they're coming after you for is what you obligated to pay. You obligated to pay a year. You stayed there for 9 months. So they said they want the other three, even though somebody came in. So here's the deal. You can't go in and ask me for something that somebody else has already paid. But you broke the lease, but you can't get it twice. And another part of that, that people, this is something that they fall into a trap with as well. When you go, let's say you go through the process of eviction, that same scenario you just gave, they're going to go to court and say, Yana, we want this amount, which might be, let's say if it was $1,000 a month, we want $3,000. You know, they, not that you didn't pay 3 months, you missed one, but they want the remaining of the lease. Well, guess what the courts cannot do? The courts cannot award them future payments. Well, what do you think they're going to put on your credit report, though? Those future payments.
Those future payments.
How do you fix it? I'm going to tell you the Martha Stewart inside secret to it. If you take that document from the court tells you what you owe. You owe the month that you missed. That's it. Actual document that you can report to the credit bureaus and say, listen, this is what they said I owed, not what that is. Now, if they don't fix it, you may have grounds to sue them for inaccurate reporting. Because the court gave you a document said you owed $1,000, not $3. Your credit report says something different. You told them, hey, listen, no, this is not accurate. This is what it's supposed to be. And if they don't fix it, guess what? They're liable. Now, they may owe you $1,000 per bureau because that would be an FCRA violation of inaccurate reporting. You see? So evictions get real tricky. A lot of states have been filing evictions on people after they've left because they can't respond. Now all of a sudden you got the eviction on you, but if you left, how you serve me at the place that I left from?
Exactly.
That they'll do. Yeah, just got to be careful for those things.
Yeah, and I know, and like I said, I noticed Texas is really, like I said, they're really big about that. I meet quite a few people, you know, that have issues with having those evictions and things like that on their nature for whatever reason. So I definitely have a resource now for them, and I can definitely refer them to you because it makes it a very hardship for people and even trying to, even if they're not ready to purchase, even to rent again.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah, that's
because like you said,
you want to make sure. Yeah, do it beforehand, not in the middle of.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. The biggest thing for people like that in those situations is to go to them, ask for, because sometimes they won't talk to you after so long. And another thing, a lot of times these companies have switched ownership. When they do that, they don't know what the other person did. So that's in your favor, too. You see, but go back to them and say, hey, can you tell me when somebody moved in you know, apartment number 123? They'll be able to tell you that. And then you still think I owe that $4? Okay.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And the first thing they're going to talk about is that broken lease thing.
I just want to say, if it's possible, we got more callers if y'all want to take a couple of more questions.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, please.
Okay. All right. Okay. 936-363, your mic is open. 936-363, your mic is open. You might have to unmute yourself. Okay, go right ahead, 936-363. You're on with Miss Tiki Williams and the credit man himself, Mr. Kenneth Lamont. I hear you like you want to say something. 936-363. Are you having difficulties? We can't hear you clearly. Maybe you got to take yourself off of mic. You're there. Okay, 469-509, your mic is open. 469-509, your mic is open.
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we can hear you.
Okay, quick question. If the eviction is filed, but the apartment complex sells it to a collection agency, are you obligated to pay the collection agency? Because, from my understanding, your debt was with the apartment complex. They sold it for pennies on a dollar to the collection agency. Are you obligated to pay the collection agency?
No, you're not obligated to pay the collection agencies. Now, what you want to make sure is to find out if, in fact, they did sell it or if they're servicing it. A lot of the apartment complexes don't sell it. They just send it to someone. So that's a different type of collection from a standpoint of ownership. Because if they don't own it, there's certain things that they can and cannot do. But no, you're not obligated to pay them anything.
Okay, that was my question.
Okay, yeah. Yeah, never pay the debt collection companies unless you necessarily have to do so.
Okay, great. Ms. Tiki Williams, we come to the final analysis. As we always having a good time. I wanted to ask you, Ms. Tiki Williams there. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, good. We'll give you some time for your final thoughts and whatnot, and maybe Brother Mr. Kenneth Lamont can come up with some thoughts either. I was just thinking, this is just a great topic, such an exciting topic. If it's possible, I don't know if you can lend him to me on Friday nights for the Black Business Billionaires Network Club, and we can continue to discuss this issue as well, because I know it's a tremendous issue with people now in our days right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, it's up to Mr. Kenneth Lamont, but yeah, definitely. I have no problem with that.
So we'd
yeah,
definitely like to have you on. If you come on this Friday night, the Black Business Billionaire Network Club, such a strong discussion, and you have some intricate, the most important thing is that you understand the particulars of the law, and that's what's really, really, really important. And I think it's such a tremendous opportunity to get people to understand the intricate workings of credit and law and how they work together. So I just wanted to, if you can, and, you can always contact me, and as well I can contact you and we can work that out. And I appreciate that, Ms. Tiki Williams. You are an angel.
Yeah, absolutely. No, thank you for, again, opening up the platform for myself and for Mr. Kenneth Lamont for us to come on and be able to talk tonight and share this wealth and knowledge with the people. And, again, I do plan on, we've already talked about it, having him back on along with Mr. Benjamin Bingham. They are both great in their industry and have a wealth of knowledge. So I appreciate them both. And so for tonight, my closing remarks, as always, let's make sure that we keep God first in any and everything that we do. Let's make sure that we try to continue to build our generational wealth and our legacy. And if someone tells you that you can't buy a home, tell them that that's not true, that they can come and see me, and we can always put you on a plan and a road to success to make that happen. So I will leave this over closing remarks to Mr. Kenneth Lamont to close us out for the night.
Put me on that spot then, right? Okay.
Yep.
Listen, I would say this, whether it's credit, finances, whatever the case might be, I'll say this, and I say it over and over again. The Bible says in all things to get an understanding. Without understanding what you're doing, you set yourself up for failure. I don't care what it is. We need to make sure that we're understanding what we're doing, have more conversations like this. There's so many things I want to say. I was writing things down, and I just was like, okay, I got to save something for later maybe. But I kind of hate to leave something on the table per se. But in all things, like again, get an understanding, and I'll leave you with that.
Come on, everybody, put your hands together. It's got to get better. All over the world, listen to these words. People come.
People come.
People go.
People go.
Your life has been.
Your life has been.
Out of control.
Out of control.
You're confused.
You're confused.
But don't worry.
Don't worry. Your song, it will get better.
It's got to get
better.
Thank you, Lord. Hey.
By the grace.
Within
better.